Welcome everybody to 90s Courts. So glad to have you here on this beautiful day. Perhaps even
was it beautiful?
It was. It was fine. I don't know where you're from.
It was fine.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Andy Clodfelter.
This is Lisa Monahan.
And we are your co-ghosts of 90s Court. Oh, wait, can't do spooky stuff anymore. Dang it.
Spooky stuff is over. Straight Christmas for the next 4 months.
I mean, I will say
I am still
watching American Horror Story right now. I got into the kick of it with Halloween, and so I just have to finish it now. So
yeah.
So how was your week, Lisa?
I don't know. It was a week, man.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
It was a long one.
I'll say it was an interesting week for me as well, and nothing else.
It was an interesting week, yeah. But we all got randomly sick for the first time, and I was like, COVID. But it wasn't COVID. It's just feels like we all have weighted blankets on our heads right now.
Yeah.
So it's very fun.
So if you're listening far off in the future, you don't know or care about any of this. But we came out a day late. So for those of you who are aware, we did come out a day late. That was due to Lisa being a little under the weather, and glad to hear she's feeling a little bit better today, or if not, at least willing to do the show in spite of it. So
yes, so I apologize in advance for whatever type of show this
and
is.
And I will say myself,
it'll be good.
I've also been feeling a little bit weird, so you're going to be getting two hosts flying at half staff today. So hopefully,
you
enjoy that.
No kidding. So, but yeah. It's just been a whole thing. I think before we get into the gully works of the show, we want to give some shout outs to our Patreon supporters. By the way, if you would like to support the show on Patreon, it feels like we haven't done a show in like 6 weeks, but it has been literally just one day more than our normal recording time. But I feel totally off my game today. It's been 64 years. Our Patreon supporters, if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/90scourt. We have a lot of exclusive content there for our supporters over there. But one of the things that you get is a shout out on the show. And we're going to go ahead and do that real quick. Shout out to our bailiffs, Lindsay. Hello, Jacqueline. We love you. Thank you. Jason, we love you. I think this is just an excuse for me to do this every week.
Yes.
Jason, we love you. Thank you. Preston, we love you. Thank you, Preston. And Afton, we love you. Thank you.
It's just like,
we love you. Thank you.
Having an excuse to bring forth the most obscure 90s reference, like,
it's burned into my soul.
You have to have
now
been one of like a million people total in the world that went to see this fucking Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles show live and in person, and that might even be favorable to say a million. So
again, if you need to see it, it's coming out of our Shells tour on YouTube. It's fully available. Thank you. We love you. As we think and love our
I do love you saying we love you, thank you, in a normal voice at the end.
Yes. Well, I've got to normalize it a little bit, right?
So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm once again asking for you to listen to Anomalous Fascination. That's right. You might. If you're on Twitter, you've seen me spamming shit nonstop. You got to understand, this is a new show, and it's one of those things where, like, listenership is just based on, hey, you've either listened and you like it, or you haven't listened, or... You know, some people might just be like, it's a good show, but it's just not my speed, right? And that's totally fine, because I understand we're talking about this in a comedy podcast, so it's a very different setting than what Anomalous Fascination is. But there's four episodes out now. We just dropped the most recent episode yesterday, Monday.
You say we. It is, and you. You are the soul guy.
That's the great thing about being on 90s Court, because I can always say we when it's actually just me. But on this, I have to just say I... Like, and it always sounds so selfish when I'm talking about myself. Okay, so the show basically covers scientifically studied real phenomena that are unbelievable. So things that either are unbelievable, unexplainable. Basically, if it's one of those two things, I cover it on the show. Covering topics from all walks of life with only one common thread. It is unexplainable and it is fascinating. I aim to blow your mind each episode, but worst case scenario, you'll just be way more interesting at parties.
That's pretty good
takeaway. So if you need a podcast to listen to with your headphones off around your kids, good news, I got you covered, as this is a G-rated podcast, aka not an explicit show, so you can listen around the kids or whomever. It's just a fun little show. They're short episodes, and it's just a cool little thing to be like, hey, I know an interesting thing now that I'm sure that the person I tell it to you in the future will also think is interesting. So yeah.
little icebreaker at parties in the future.
Oh, yeah.
No absolutely. Parties yet.
100%.
Don't go to parties
icebreaker
now.
Icebreaker is at Zoom meetings.
I was going to say Zoom, yeah, Zoom hangouts.
So rad. So anyway, so just wanted to give that plug again. And again, I appreciate, I know we've gotten a plenty of listeners to the original drop of the episode on this feed. But again, if you want to check out the show, just search Anomalous Fascination on the podcast app of your choice, or check me out at Anomaly Pod on Twitter. And if you're on Twitter, you will definitely see me because we... 90s Court shares all their shit because I'm a psychopath. So you want to get to the show about the 90s?
Let's do this thing, all right.
Baby. 90s Court.
Oh, my.
All right. So this week, this is the energy Jeez. I'm bringing to this show.
Yeah, weird.
In lieu of interesting thoughts, here are some noises. So this week I'm going to be covering something that you know, you love, but maybe you didn't know the whole story. This is what I call the Anomalous Fascination episode of a 90s thing.
Okay, interesting.
So today I'll be covering up a invention that came out in 1992, created by, let me see... L.A. Lights Company. I'm sorry, L.A., not L.A. Lights. I'm sorry, L.A., let's see, L.A. Gear. I'm trying to think of their the actual brand name. But basically, they came out with a product in 1992 that would completely change the game for children of all kinds, which is L.A. Lights Light Up Shoes.
Those are the best. Yes. I love them so much.
Let's go over the rich history of L.A. Lights. And, of course, their frequent knockoffs after that point.
Okay.
Created in 1992 by LA Lights, a company originally designed for women's apparel that eventually began making shoes for children and men because they were like, well, we need to make more money because just, you know, because we're a business. They even scored a huge sports contract with their shoes, shown off by major athletes and numerous NCAA teams. However, in late 1990, multiple players on the Marquette basketball team watched as their shoes literally disintegrated on the court while playing on a nationally televised game. So basically, their spot in the athletic shoes game was basically completely quashed, and so they had to think up something new to keep the business afloat after that flop. So in 1992, desperate times call for desperate measures, and they busted out the big guns.
Those were some big guns.
Motherfucking LA Lights.
Oh,
shoes with
the best.
Pretty interesting designs, you know, your general shoe. Because honestly, like, the shoes really weren't crazy. Like, there wasn't a whole lot about the actual shoe, like, from the top, the cloth part of it wasn't too crazy. Mm-hmm. But for those of you who are unfamiliar with it, which was crazy to me, the most notable thing was that the soles of the shoes, so like the rubber part, were filled with amazing lights that responded to movement. So basically you take a step and boop, it lights up. So, and I always thought, I was like, that is so cool. Like, that is such advanced technology to get it. So like, if you just move it, it lights up. That felt like that, but we'll get to the reason that technology worked so well.
Okay.
So if you were a kid at this time, which I was, these were everything.
Yes, they were.
I know for a fact I did have a pair of these, or possibly a knockoff, probably a knockoff brand, but what wasn't to like? I mean, they lit up. It was baller. We loved it. So obviously they crushed it with these shoes, getting huge contracts with retailers like Foot Locker, eventually selling more than 5 million pairs in their first 12 months. Booyah. And for the next year, they continued to be the dopest thing in the market. Eventually, though, the grunge era kind of came out, and which is weird because I'm like, these are children, aren't they? Like, I don't know how many kids are getting into Nirvana that are like 8 years old.
I don't know, man. My four-year-old's favorite, or when he was four, my four-year-old's favorite song was In Bloom by Nirvana. I was like, okay, that's what's happening in my family,
well, hey,
I guess. So
everything's falling
apart.
Who
knows? Everything's not going so good.
So they continued to be, so eventually, you know, more copycats came out and kind of delegitimizing the product as they kind of got worse and worse by other companies doing them, annoying commercials that people were doing. And so they kind of lost popularity, as most things do, since this is clearly a gimmick product. It's not like you see it, you're like, I get it now. They light up.
Yeah. But it's just, I mean, think of as a kid, I don't know how far you're going to go into all this stuff, but like as a kid, it was the best shit because you would just dream for like, I don't know, heads down, thumbs up in the classroom. And you could just like, you know, the teacher turns the light down, or at least they did in our room, which is a sad, weird thought now that I think about it, but you could kick your shoe on the ground and boop, 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 boop. It would light, or you could like finally play basketball at 11 p.m. because your parents aren't paying attention to you.
There is,
you're just outside.
Lisa, are you telling me that you believe that the lights from these shoes allowed you to play basketball in the dark?
Yeah, man. I was an NBA rock star.
Like, you can see just so well because of these, like, tiny little lights that come with shoes.
But it's not that you can see. It's that people can see you, and they see you out there carrying the team on your back.
Oh, so, I mean, if you're looking for recognition of, like, man, what a cool baller, he's out there just getting it day in and day out.
Your athlete status upped at least 25% just by having lights. You'd be like, yeah, I'm still, my BMI is still, like, 80, but, like, I'm rocking some cool shoes, and thank you. So yeah,
no, I don't blame. I mean, honestly, I didn't even think about that. I really should have been showing off my, like, because people don't know if you're making the baskets. They're just like, I mean, I assume so. He's playing at fucking midnight. This kid's got to be a fucking rock star if he's playing that late.
Yeah.
So you build a lot of cred. Eventually, you take over the school. You're the cool kid, and then eventually they see you shoot a ball, and they're like, oh, this guy sucks. And then it's over, and they kill you. So
yes. Exactly.
On that note, started going downhill pretty quick in 95 and 96 when parents started to get a little upset about these shoes that their children had been wearing for years. And why do you ask? Because these shoes had unknowingly been extremely dangerous the entire time.
What?
That's right. How do you get shoes that are super have a super cool effect of lighting up when your foot hits the ground? It's not magic. It's not fire. It's that tasty, tasty toxic mercury.
I love you, mercury.
I love you, mercury, for making my shoes light up.
There was mercury in those shoes?
Every fucking pair had mercury in them. And there are children wearing these on their body all the time. So not only like is there the chance of like it coming out or something like that, or children being exposed to it, but these shoes were unthrowable. You literally like legally could not throw them away.
What are you talking about?
You can't throw away toxic chemicals into your normal dump.
This is America.
I mean, yeah, I'm not saying people don't do it. Like, they're not. Nobody's going to be checking for the fucking light-up shoes. But I'm just saying, like,
oh my gosh.
So several states, including Minnesota, who sued for $70,000 just for assisting with disposal efforts for the extremely toxic shoes, because they're like, listen, like, we're not paying for this. You guys are the ones who put this shit on the shelf. And finally, in 1996, the real nail in the coffin was the EPA. Putting new regulations banning the use of mercury-containing batteries, which means no more glowy shoes.
What? But my kids have glowy shoes.
But if you're asking yourself, hey, if you're thinking, hey, my kids have glowy shoes.
I am saying. I walked right into that.
I didn't have those words written down, but it seemed too perfect. Of course, not learning our lesson in recent years, light-up shoes are back. But this time, using LED lights. So, because they have the technology a little bit better now, so they can do that versus like having mercury like spin around in this thing that lights up or whatever. And though not being a risk to literally everyone who owned them like mercury was, they have been reported in numerous cases to cause fire or burns on the children. So anyways, super cool. That being said, I'd fuck with some light up shoes.
Oh yeah, would if they so as a woman in 2020, one of my favorite pairs of shoes is like the Birkenstock sandals. Like I'm gonna go get brunch with my friend Lydia. I guess you have a friend named Lydia, and I would give anything for those Birks to have some lights on the side. I guess what I could do, Andy, is just get like some little LED lights, or like go to Dollar Tree and get like the little button that you press that has a light on it.
I mean,
no, don't we have like LED strips now? Couldn't I do some like Bluetooth enabled LED strips on the sides of my Birks?
I'm not sure, but I know like, you know how they have like at least I had these at my old apartment was like, there's just like a little box with a switch on it. And it's just like a really tiny string of like Christmas lights. And I'm just thinking of like
tucking
that and then just like wrapping those like putting them like through the laces and stuff so they light up and blink.
Oh my gosh, this is what you and I are going on our new adventure. When this podcast ends, we're starting a shoe company with light up Perkins stars.
I'm sure that everyone will greatly respect our shoe company, which involves taking normal shoes and putting Christmas lights on them. look, it's a new thing. Buy our stuff.
Yeah, we didn't even invent this. We just took existing shoes and we taped a string of lights to them. The first step, you break some of the lights, they stop working by the second step. But that's user error.
The box is going to say like Claude Monahan Productions. Yeah. But once you open it up, you'll be like, these are just Nikes with some fucking Christmas lights on them.
Do you know the better combination is Monfilter?
Well, now I know that. Yes.
Yeah, Monfilter. Monfilter. I don't know.
Clodahan or Monfilter.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. LA Lights, baby.
Claude Monahan Corporations, TMTM.
Oh my gosh. Was that the end of your thing?
Yeah, that's the end of my thing.
So I am loving that you chose LA Lights because in the back of my brain, I was like, we're doing the same thing. It's going to happen one day. We didn't do the same thing, but goddamn, Andy, we're so close. Because today, Andy, I'm going to talk about a toy that I always wanted, always coveted, but I never got to try. And I don't know if it was like too expensive or if I was just like a chunk and a half or like, but I never got them. And the toy I'm referencing today, it was a chunk and a half. Don't forget, if I had my LA Lights, I've made you think, oh, she athletic. Just kidding. She's sitting down eating a full medium sized Domino's pizza by herself and crying. Don't worry about it, son. The toy I'm referencing today, Andy, is none other than the motherfucking moon shoes.
Dude, we got so close. That's unbelievable.
We're so close. So again, for anyone who doesn't, we don't talk about our thing in advance. Yeah. We do it completely in private, bring it to the show. It's really fun that way. But yeah, we almost nailed each other on that one. That's hilarious.
I mean, here's the thing is if we ended up covering the same thing, I'm almost positive, like because we approach stuff with such different like ways of approaching them, like on our things, we'd probably still just talk about the same thing and it'd be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be like, yeah, you'd have more facts than I would. And I would just be like, I was sad and
you'd
fat,
have
and
a lot of actual, anecdote. You would have some really great actual like historic feelings and stories about them versus me who's like, I don't remember anything, but here's my Wikipedia article.
Yeah, everything I do is emotionally tied somehow. But the first gen moon shoes, actually, there was like nothing about these online. Surprisingly, there was very little, but I couldn't tell if it came out in the 50s or 70s. We're going to go with the 70s. And guess what, Andy? Much like any other thing from that era, they were not safe at all.
What?
The original moon shoes that came out were like a flat metal piece of metal.
Excuse
in the shape
me,
of a machine. Are you looking at it?
No.
And they were like, and the springs were just big ass metal springs. And it was just like, yeah, no, it's like, like the logo had to have been something like you're one tetanus shot away from fun or so. Like it was just,
oh my God.
If you look it up, just like look up original.
Yeah. I
moon
typed
shoes.
In that as exact words and they look like they should be skis, but there's no skis on them. They're just
sharp metal.
They're just a metal flip flop. With springs on top of another metal flip-flop.
Yes, and are you getting like a weird like mental hospital vibe from it? Because it's coming off, because like the straps.
It looks
and it's
like
just,
a
like,
shoe in a straitjacket.
Yes, and it's like, I'm going to cut your ass so hard. But mercifully, thank goodness, as Nickelodeon always does, they came through for us. They relaunched the shoes in either 89 or 90. I couldn't get a solid peg on that. But
thank
like,
you.
Yes, thank you again, Nick. And there's not a ton of information about this, like I said, but they made them more child-friendly in that the shoes part were made of plastic and they used bungees or like really thick rubber bands, which look like just vacuum cleaner belts, but I could be wrong, but they would help you jump. And so I remember the kids in the commercials looked like they were getting mad air, right? Like that's from my memory as a kid. I watched the commercials today, not so much. It just seems like they're just kind of, they got like a little just a little.
I increased my jump by 1.5 inches.
Yeah, it's like this is just a secret workout. This is not actually fun. And so I'm bummed out thinking that this something that I really wanted forever as a kid doesn't actually look that interesting anymore. But you can still buy some on eBay. I saw some as cheap as like $10. I don't know. In my head, they were like $80 retail.
It just looks like shitty Tupperware.
It does. Honestly, you could just put your foot inside of some plastic Tupperware and like take some bungee cords and then wrap it around in one of your 700 Amazon boxes that are being delivered this week and be like, ooh, moon shoes. And you did it. And you could have moon shoes.
See, I was the entire, like when we first started talking about it, I was looking at the 90s, 89, 90s moon shoes. Mm-hmm. The whole time I was thinking, I like, sometimes I have like a visceral reaction to something. And it was of me rolling my ankle so bad in those things. Like, I cannot imagine for more than 10 seconds not ending up like my, I can't even unfeel it. It's just the feeling of me, my ankle just taking slightly wrong turn as the shoe slips out from under me and I am disabled forever.
Yes, this just seems like an automatic trip to the urgent care. And it just, either like the band is going to break, you're going to roll your ankle, you might jam it from jumping too hard. It just feels like you might suddenly develop bad knees at the age of seven. Or seven. Like, I don't know. Or like, it just also looks like the plastic might also just cut your shit. At the end of the day, this toy that seemed like a lot of fun still seems like a massive liability, far less so than its original version of like metal slide bonanza. Yeah. But this just, it still doesn't, at I least don't those know. I think the 90s.
At least those wouldn't give, but those also look like a death trap for rolling ankles too.
Yes, they do. Well, yeah, those look like they're just going to sever like your Achilles tendon or something. Like it's my butt. It just immediately just like
puckered.
No, yeah. So anyway, shoes.
We've done a lot of shoes. I do want to say, I did immediately after, like when we were talking about this, think of, for some reason, this child was jumping near a cliff. I don't know why. And he just jumps really deeply down and then lifts up. And then the purple like shoe part of it comes loose from the bungees. And then he just flies off the cliff. I don't know why that just made me laugh so much.
Because you're
awful.
Because
I love the thought of kill children dying. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, especially if it was like, why would you be jumping on the edge of a cliff? Well, that's on me. You're right.
Yeah.
I should have done that. I'm dead now. This is me.
For any weirdos out there who are listening to our show and are like, I wonder if Andy actually likes watching children die. No, I do not. It was just a joke, but still.
He has not met my children
with
good reason.
Because I don't know enough about the law to know if I can be sued for comments about like my opinion on children dying. So anyways, I have not met your children, but apparently... You do find it acceptable if they were to... Okay, never mind. You're allowed to say it. I'm not.
No, I'm just saying natural selection. So, listen, shoes. That's our thing. Before we say anything else that's going to make more people unsubscribe from the show, why don't we pause, take a break, regroup, gather ourselves.
Next review, like 5 stars. Really great show. Really enjoy the content and the hosts. Only suggestion, less jokes about dead kids.
Yeah, just a few.
Hey guys, cool it on the dead kids, okay?
Yeah, cool it on that front. But listen, we will take a break. We'll come back with poll results. We'll get to our thing, which is going to be, or not our thing, our court case. It's going to be awesome. And then we will see you after the break.
Bye.
Welcome back to the show. Thank you for not unsubscribing for our digressions in the previous part of the show. We are back, though.
Yeah, there's going to be a solid 50% less dead children in this portion of the episode, so
we'll do our best. No promises, because it's still us. But listen, y'all, we have poll results. Results? Jeez Louise, Lisa.
Listen, that's about the speed of me as well, is just talking like a 4-year-old.
Yeah, so
R's and W's. hey, everybody, I'm Andy.
Hey.
I'm the other guy. So I'd like to talk about these polls from last week. Anaconda versus arachnophobia, as you will recall. Spiders versus snakes, so to speak, except one of them was a film that scored 82% on Rotten Tomatoes and one was like a 26 or something like that. So anyway, so we're going to see which one came out victorious. So it's going to be it seems a real nail-biter. So... On Facebook, came out 79.4% to 20.6% arachnophobia. Okay. So, like, I think it's also, like, based on ages especially, like, on Twitter, so on Facebook, it's, like, a lot of people that are just like, hey, like, I might not have even, you know, I was old enough during Anaconda to realize that this is bad.
Yes. But no one was old enough, even at the age of 75, to look at a record.
Even
and
people
be like,
born in the
scared. 40s
weren't old enough.
Yeah. I didn't get your results. Arachnophobia was 70-30 on IG.
70, yeah. Oh, 70, what was it? 70-30?
70-30. Okay. Yeah, sorry
so
about that.
So about the same there. Now, Twitter, on the other hand.
Oh. Ooh.
So it's so weird every week, like the disparity between Facebook and Twitter and even IG. Twitter came out and was just like, you know what? I kind of like Anaconda. Not enough to win by any means, but it was 54.9% to 45.1% for Arachnophobia. So a lot of snake truthers out there on the Twitter. So some of the snake truthers came out in support of me, and I am forever in your debt. So thank you so much.
I don't know if they should be thanked for that, but maybe they need to do some soul searching to figure out why they are the way that they are.
Yeah.
Thank you, listeners.
Well, hey, gang, we're of course, you know what the episode title is. You've been waiting for it till this point. We're really excited to bring some amazing bands here. As something just came across my desk. Ba-dum, dun, 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 Everlong. So this week we'll be bringing you the Foo Fighters versus Weezer.
Weezer.
Or technically the other way around, because Lisa will be going first this week, as I went first last week. So I have chosen to defend the Foo Fighters, and Lisa has determined to defend the hipsters.
The hipsters. Now, for what it's worth, I love Foo Fighters. I do. I don't think as much as Andy does, but I know both bands are great, so we're just going to
start there. And that's the thing, is this is one where, like, no bad taste in my mouth, whichever way this goes. Although I do want you to know that yours is going to lose.
Oh, absolutely. I fully intend to, and that's okay, because the hardcore...
I hate that you just said the thing that you said, because now it's going to win, because that's what happens every time somebody decides that theirs is going to lose. The other one wins every time.
Am I still mad about Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark? Probably.
I think everybody... You know, I mean, everybody is. Like, the people who... It's kind of like... I don't want to give this comparison because that would be political, but from several years ago, political, don't worry, not anything this year.
Okay. Too soon, Andy.
No, I was going to say it's very much a, I think a lot of the Goosebumps people were like, yeah, I like Goosebumps. And all the people who voted for scary Stories in the Tall and Dark were like, yes, motherfucker, give me that Scary Stories. Like, so it was kind of like a lukewarm, like, sure, Goosebumps versus everybody who was talking about Scary Stories in the Dark was 100% on board. So it was the quality of the votes, not the quantity.
The motion in the ocean. That's the size that of the also. Ship. Listen, let's get started. Let's court case this baby out. I will start with Weezer. Weezer is just the bee's knees. Who doesn't just want to hear this? Who doesn't want to hear me play all 4 minutes and 20 seconds of this? Probably... their record label doesn't want me to play all 4 minutes probably, and 20 seconds of that.
That's probably number one on the list, I'd say.
Probably number one. Weezer is a band that started in 1992. And of course, like everything, they're based out of LA, as you do. Weezer, like them or not, has always been an important and actually pretty fucking good band, okay? And I don't know if it's a genre or not per se, but like they've always been categorized in my book as like nerd rock. I don't know if that's...
Every time I'm always like, they just have always struck me as like being super cool. And like, again, this is kind of what they give out is being cool with who they are, like, and just being super chill. Now, I have no reason to think that. That's just me from watching their music videos.
Yes. And I will say this, having known that they started in 92, I mean, they've been riding this wave for like almost 30 years now. Okay. And so they've been doing their thing exactly the way that they're doing it. Yeah. But who they were then is still who they are. And they have lived through some eras where like the nerd rock thing was cool. And then it became very not cool. It's like, but they were doing this before. Yeah. Way before. And so, I don't know. Props to them. So, consistency is key. I want some key lime pie. That sounds delicious.
Oh my God. That was the weirdest departure from.
It was. But I said key and I was like, key lime pie.
I know. I got where you were coming from there. I just didn't think it was a great landing point.
It wasn't. Key. I never censor myself though. So, what's up? Let's talk band members. Number one, Rivers Cuomo. He is lead vocals, guitar, and keyboard. Tickling the plastic ivories. I guess it wouldn't be ivories at that point. Patrick Wilson on drums, Brian Bell on guitar, backup vocals, and also keyboard. And then Scott Schringer? Schringer. Definitely on bass, and then more vocals forever. So I would say that the 2000s and 2010s were not amazingly generous to Weezer, but surely I think many would say that their heyday was in the 90s, and they are still going, like I said. But let's talk about the stuff that they did in the 90s, because this is 90s court, not now court. And so the two albums they released in the 90s were both pretty fucking amazing. And before we dive into said album, let's do some quick background on their history, because it's actually, I mean, it's always interesting to kind of dig into that a little bit.
So,
Rivers Cuomo moved to LA in 89 with his then metal band called Avant Garde. Hello, cat. Stop it.
Avant-garde.
There's a cat attacking my hand. It's hard to focus with a cat attacking my hand. That group, of course, disbanded, and then he met the drummer Patrick Wilson and moved in with him and Matt Sharp, who was the bassist on the first two Weezer albums, so kind of an important dude. Wilson and Rivers then formed a band called Fuzz and brought in a fella named Scotty Chapman on bass, and then he quit after a few shows. Sorry about that, bro. You missed out on a good boat. This is interesting. The band then rebranded and was named 60 Wrong Sausages.
So let's
pause and take a moment to take that band name in, please.
Was it Wrong Sausages? Was that the word you said?
60 Wrong. Yep.
Right. Sausages. I guess I've just never fully graded that there was a difference between a right or a wrong sausage.
You know the difference between a right and a wrong sausage the moment you finish eating it. You're like,
that's
that wasn't the one.
Probably about right. Or even as you're eating it, maybe it would be the preferable situation. So Fuzz was the first name.
Fuzz.
Then can you repeat the name one more time?
60 Wrong Sausages.
Okay.
60.
That's good
like,
to know. The rest of them
many.
Were fine, but that is far too many. Yes.
Yeah. I wonder if this is in relation to like hot dog eating contests.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Joey Chestnut was around to beat that to have gotten that record yet. I don't know if I don't think they'd gotten to 60 Wrong Sausages at that point.
Who knows? It was early 90s.
Maybe at that time it was like a goal they were setting for themselves to potentially eat 60 sausages.
Well, those 60 Wrong Sausages were in fact wrong, and they disbanded shortly thereafter, leading to Rivers to moving to Santa Monica, where he recorded some demos, including Undone, the sweater song. So that happened.
No big deal.
Pretty early on. No big deal. Just a little song. You may have heard it. No big deal. After hearing the demo, Sharp decided to play with Patrick Wilson and Rivers, and Weezer was officially born on February 14th, 1992. A happy Valentine's Day to you.
Yay.
We're 7 years old. No, wait, 6 years old.
The worst day of the year.
Mm-hmm. By the way, it is the worst day of the year.
Trust me, I know. That's why I said it.
It's really bad. Even as someone who's married, it's like, oh, shit. Now we got to, like, plan a meal and, like, have wine, I guess. It's not worth it. But listen, if you've ever wondered where the band name Weezer came from, it's from a nickname that Rivers' father gave to him, which is both adorable and also kind of sad. I wonder if he's asthmatic.
Wow. Thanks, Dad.
Thanks, Dad.
That's
hey,
all Weezer.
The name of my band is called Loser. It's a sweet something that my dad used to call me all the time when he passed me in the hallway and just hip checked me.
Jesus Christ!
Thanks,
like a
Dad.
Fucking dad was like a my dad was like a fucking hockey player in the
that
house.
That was Narnar. So they of course signed on with the Almighty Geffen Records in 1993 and released their self-titled album, better known as the Blue Album. So let's talk about the Blue Album now, okay? It's probably lauded as their number one album, and I think rightfully so, which is tough, though, because it's their first album. So it's really tough to have the first thing that you present be, like, the end-all be-all.
It does suck
career.
Because then that kind of suggests that, like, just nothing ever lived up to the first thing you did ever again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because there's always the stereotypical sophomore slump, which a lot of bands, directors, everyone falls victim to.
Unless you're my band.
Unless you're your band, in which you come out swinging with machetes.
You light the world on fire, yes.
You let the whole world on fire. Can I take a
quick moment to discuss the term narnar that you used earlier? I don't
yes.
know. I wrote that down in my notes because I didn't want to miss it.
Sure.
Is that a thing? Is that happening?
Narnar is my way of saying gnarly.
Oh, I know what it means. I'm asking if it's happening. Are we doing that now?
I'm making it happen.
Okay.
I'm making Fetch
ladies
happen.
And gentlemen, please make Narnar happen.
Please, Narnar. And if you, I think I also sometimes say Narnar Beings. I don't know what that means.
It's like Jar Jar Binks, but instead it's Narnar.
That's what it is. Because yeah. I was like, it's not Chandler Bing. It's Narnar Bing. There it is. Thank you. I couldn't even.
Okay, I derailed you. I'm sorry.
No, but I couldn't make the... Thank you for helping me understand why I ended up on that Narnar Binks. There it is.
Well, we did it. That was the goal of this whole show. So I guess we can sign off now. See you guys.
Guess what? I still want key lime pie.
Well.
So what's that meme about, like, if you shoot a duck, the toaster... Something about... there's a meme. Someone knows what I'm talking about. It's the kid photo... All right. I'm back to the Blue Album. Listen. Just, yeah, duck toaster meme. All right,
Look
it up while I'm talking. Yeah,
go to like mushrooms. If you shoot a duck, I'm scared of toasters.
That's the one. That's how my brain functions. That's exactly how it functions. So let's, all right, Blue Album. This is an interesting thing that I'd read. Geffen didn't actually want to release a single for that album, but wanted to see what sales could be generated by word of mouth alone, which is like a pretty fucked up approach for promoting an album. Be like, let's not actually
do
anything.
That's pretty risky, but
let's
okay.
Let's just see what happens. Let's just put it out there and see how she floats. Turns out it floated very well, and it worked really well. So this album has probably the biggest chunk of Weezer's best songs, and that would be opening track of My Name is Jonas, Buddy Holly, Say It Ain't So, In the Garage, which is great, and then Undone, the Sweater Song. So, I mean, it's so good. I will, before I go on to the albums, I have to say, I dated for my long-term college boyfriend, one of the 18 Kevins I dated. Too many Kevins. He used to do a Weezer cover band. Or he participated in it, and they would only play, not only, but they would traditionally just play the Blue Album from start to finish, like cover it. And I was like, that's whack. But looking back, I'm like, that's pretty rad, actually. Like people, because people would always come to those shows because this album was so loved. Was the band that good? Not Weezer. I'm saying Weezer's great, but like my ex-boyfriend's cover band. But
that's the thing, though, dude, is it's like the cover bands that like just know what people want to hear, like, they make more money than people doing original content out at concerts, for sure.
Absolutely. And in college, I mean, can you, like, it's probably one of the best college highlights of someone's career to being like, yeah, I was in a Weezer cover band and we would just play the Blue
Hell
Album.
Yeah.
In, like, the rec area or whatever it was. I don't know. But it was a sweet deal. So I all through college, I was listening to the Blue Album. So in the past, we talked about the Buddy Holly song and video. That was episode 31. Where I talked about the Windows 95 bonus disc, which you need to go listen to that episode because whole...
I thought you were telling me I needed to get the disc, but yeah, you need to listen to that episode.
I want that disc. So episode 31 is where I talked about the Buddy Holly song and the inclusion of it on the Windows 95 disc, but the song rules, okay? The opening line, what's with these homies dissing my girl? Why do they got a front? I mean, like, what's more magical in 1994 than this group of white dudes belting that line? And they're so scrawny. Like, Rivers does not appear to be a very large man. I don't know his size, but he looks to be about 5'9", 5'8",
sure.
And, like, 140 soaking wet. Like, so, I don't know. And then, of course, Spike Jonze directed the video, which was spliced with footage from Happy Days. And it was just solid. I don't know. What did I say? 1994?
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome. That was the dopest shit ever. Oh, it was just the coolest. And so the other songs on the album are also so awesome, but like I need to give extreme special mention to Say It Ain't So, because it's just one of the best songs they've ever recorded, in my opinion. Perfectly singable. And if you know Weezer, you know Say It Ain't So.
Oh,
it's kind of sad, but it's just good. It's just good. And it's quirky and it's just good. But like I want to make sure I give plenty of time to Foo Fighters because they certainly deserve it. So I want to make sure that I just want to give it. I don't want to say just give special mention to Pinkerton because it's not like that. But the second album of theirs from the 90s was Pinkerton. And I talked to my husband about this in length, and he was like, he made clear that like if you dug Weezer, listening to Pinkerton was more of a, like you had to really go for it because it was, some considered it sophomore slump. It wasn't really that way. It was just Rivers was in a different headspace and I don't know. We'll get into that. But like there were some great songs on it. Tired of Sex is so good. So good. That's the opening track, I believe. Get You was always good. And of course, El Scorcho, which is just...
Okay, El Scorcho fuck. I do know, but that's about the only one from that album I'm super familiar with.
Tired of Sex is good. I'll have to get to it. But I was on the... I did like a 20-mile bike ride on Saturday. And I was just listening to Weezer the whole time. And when it got to Tired of Sex, I was just like, this song fucking rips. Like, it's so good. It's so Narnar Binks. It's so good. But yeah, I know you can.
I keep saying that I can't, but really, like, I just...
You're going
every
to.
Time you say it, I'm just like, I want somebody to say that. I want to just hear somebody in public saying that and know that it traced back to you.
Maybe I should send a $5 Amazon gift card to the person that can message me first by saying Narnar Binks. I'm not going to send you $5, but I'll send you an emotional $5 gift card.
An emotional?
What's
like,
an emotional
which,
$5
honestly,
gift
you could have
card?
Said any dollar amount emotional, and they would have believed you, and you chose such a small amount.
I did. Well, you know, I don't have a lot to spare these days, so $5 is about all you're going to get. Yeah, even fake emotional dollars. So, like I said, it wasn't... Pinkerton wasn't as fun or as playful as the Blue Album, like at all. Apparently, Rivers had returned to studying at Harvard and was also dealing with like the massive success of Weezer with the Blue Album, and it was just a lot. And people were always doing the like, "What does it feel like to be a rock star?" And he was like, "Pretty fucking lonely, actually." And he had also had some kind of like leg lengthening surgery around this time, and he was depressed about love, and it was a lot. So he was down, and you can definitely feel it in Pinkerton, and it does grow on you, but it was not initially as well received as a Blue Album by any means. And so at this point they kind of take a hiatus, and they return in 2000 with the Green Album. And we're going to stop there, because anything after 99, we kind of just, but the 2000 Green Album brought you Island in the Sun and Hash Pipe, which were two bangers, like really good. And my husband was always like, the stuff they did later seemed kind of like a parody of themselves. And I could see that, because the magic that the Blue Album had is so well preserved that you kind of just keep going back to the well. And I wouldn't say you do it as well as you did the first time, but like, I loved, I think it was like 2008, Pork and Beans. I love that song. I love Pork and Beans. Mm. I know.
I mean, I will say it's a good song. I shouldn't, right? It's just... It's like, it is one of those things where it's like, you set the state, you set the level of excellence so high right away that, like, it is so impossible to top that, because people have such big expectations.
Yeah, it's true. That's exactly right. But here we are nearly 30 years later, they're still doing their thing. And of course, they had that big, you know, resurgence of popularity with their cover of Toto's Africa. I think it was like 2018, 2019. So they're still doing their thing. They're alive and kicking. Rivers and team doing great. But fuck, man, the Blue Album, it really is iconic. Now, it's not, I would not say it can hold much of a candlestick, Alexa. Kindle dot. That's not a thing.
I thought you were gonna ask Alexa, like, Alexa, what's a candle? What was the thing you said?
What's a candle dot?
Candle
how
dot.
How do I download the Foo Fighters to my candle? I'm going to turn this horrible train wreck over to Foo Fighters, please.
Okay. Yeah. I wanted to get away, get something out. You did say the words leg lengthening at some point, and and sometimes, Lisa, you say words. And yes. You continue after them, at no point acknowledging that that's the most insane series of words ever.
Sometimes it's just to see if people are paying attention. It wasn't a lie. That was the truth.
You said it and you're like, yeah, you know, whatever. Move on.
Yeah. So. Just see what happens. Just drop a little knowledge in there. See who bites. You bit. Thank you for biting.
I'm always good to catch those things. So
you are.
I'm going to talk about the Foo Fighters. One of my, here's the thing. It is in the echelon of my top three favorite bands. Literally they rotate just depending on the mood that I'm in, between Foo Fighters, Incubus, Jimmy Eat World. Cause I consider those like on a level. And we'll go over that more about like that. The Foo Fighters are kind of the heavier version. The Incubus is kind of the middle version, and then Jimmy Eat World is the super lighter version. Like, if I'm feeling real emotional, I'm going to go Jimmy Eat World or heavier Foo Fighters, and then Incubus is kind of just like the sweet spot in between.
Yes.
So
I can see that.
Foo Fighters. American rock band formed in Seattle. Duh. said Los Angeles is the big place. Absolutely not. Seattle is the place for rock bands.
Well, no, but he was still there being left over.
I know.
From Nirvana,
that's the thing,
man.
Is I like, it's not Damn. Too surprising. And I even put the word duh next to Seattle in 1994 because he, they formed shortly after the dissolving of Nirvana after the suicide of Kurt Cobain. So over the course of their career, still ongoing, they have won 12 Grammy Awards, including Best Rock Band 4 times,
wow.
along with numerous other music awards. And obviously they had to get in on the crucial MTV Music Awards as well. So important.
So big.
So prior to the dissolving of Nirvana, Dave Grohl, obviously the frontman for Foo Fighters, had written many songs while touring across the world with Nirvana. Weirdly, though, which is an insane thing to think of now, he never felt comfortable sharing his songs with the band because he was so in awe of Kurt Cobain's songs that he didn't think that they would even hold a candle to like what he writes. So he was like almost embarrassed of them because he's like, I'm never going to write anything like Cobain did. Evidently, you know, obviously people obviously think of Nirvana as kind of like the upper echelon, but Foo Fighters has just had so much staying power for so long.
Oh yeah.
So when they dissolved, Grohl received tons of offers from other bands. Like it was a huge like fest. Like we need to steal Dave Grohl. Kidnapping of Dave Grohl in the music industry.
I love that episode of Always Sunny.
Always Sunny. It's where they kidnapped Dave Grohl. And it was rumored that he was going to join Pearl Jam and actually almost accepted a position as a drummer of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. So there's a lot of gossip going around about different stuff. And then he actually, the one place he was thinking about was that. However, obviously, since half the title episode is the Foo Fighters and not Dave Grohl's amazing journey with other bands, he decided to decline all of those offers and begin his own band. So the name Foo Fighter, oddly enough, was a nickname coined by aircraft pilots from the Allied forces of World War II in reference to UFOs and other aerial phenomena.
What
you're probably thinking is, A, why did you think you needed to get something from World War II aircraft pilots? And B, why did aircraft pilots in World War II have enough reason to make a nickname for UFOs and unidentified aerial phenomena?
There's a lot to unpack here, Andy.
Right. Like, that means that those aircraft pilots had to have so much contact with it, they're like, we need to have a term for this.
Oh, my gosh.
So those are the Foo Fighters.
Wow.
Anyways. So he anonymously handed out recordings of the Foo Fighters, a sample tape that was originally like would end up becoming Foo Fighters, the self-titled album.
Mm-hmm.
So he was handing it off to several people in the industry. He was sending it to them though anonymously, and that's what's important, is because he wanted to know if it was good, and not just, hey, this is by Dave Grohl, so we want it. So basically he wanted to find out was this worth pursuing? So he was kind of giving out to them, and obviously he was getting really good feedback from it and was getting offers from other people. Apparently he chose the name Foo Fighters, plural, at the time of putting out the album because he wanted the people listening to it to think this was a whole band. Although it was actually just Dave Grohl who reported all of the parts.
So Tame Impala style.
Yeah, exactly. So, which is what he did. So after some time, the tape received quite a bit of positive feedback and got some attention by record labels, which eventually he thought, well, I guess I should probably get a band then. Which is a great.
No big deal.
This is the best like order of operations in that system, is deciding after. There's like, I should probably get a band, I guess.
Yeah.
So Grohl later reflected, had I actually considered this to be a career, basically, they considered if the band was going to work out, I probably would have called it something else because it is the stupidest fucking band name in the world. That's an exact quote from Dave Grohl.
Wow. Oh, no, that's right. I think I've read that before. Yeah.
So, weirdly, the Foo Fighters in the 90s was largely just, hey, it's Dave Grohl, and then whoever Dave Grohl happened to get on for the other instruments for the album. Like, at least in the 90s, because he hadn't really, it took him a little bit to settle on the exact band that would stick with him the whole way. So he did snag some talented guys, William Goldsmith, Nate Mendel, Pat Smear, who all played for the 95 debut album Foo Fighters. However, the drummer Goldsmith quit during the recording of the second album, The Color and Shape, in 1997, because evidently Dave Grohl just decided to pre-record the majority of the drum parts in the album. It's needless to say,
he's
like,
tough.
Yeah, he's just like, what am I, like, why am I here? So he just quit. And I can't imagine it was too rough to fix that issue because he'd already recorded most of them, so he just did the rest of them.
Yeah.
So anyway, so the self-titled album, Foo Fighters, came out in 95, and it absolutely crushed. So featuring some amazing bangers that you may be familiar with right off the bat, singles such as This Is a Call, I'll Stick Around, Big Me, and For All the Cows. So so those were some pretty well-known songs right off the bat. You would know them if you heard them, for sure. Their second most successful album, which has sold 1.47 million units in North America, and of course, many, many more worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned a bit ago, the next album that was to come out was The Color and Shape. And so,
no big deal.
If you thought like that was like, man, that was a really amazing, successful first album, and then they said like, yeah, but what if we just absolutely made our best album ever, mm-hmm. and to the point where nothing else could possibly live up to it. So The Color and the Shape released May of 1997. This was considered the first real significant album as a band, quote unquote, as the original album was largely by Grohl alone.
Mm-hmm.
Now this album, listen, they have bangers on every album, but this one is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
This one is insane. Let's do it.
Monkey Wrench.
Yep.
Everlong. Swoon.
Oh.
And My Hero. Chef's kiss.
Yeah. By the way, I thought My Hero came out sometime in the mid-2000s. And so when I was listening to this album kind of just recently, I was just like, oh my gosh, this was in the 90s? Because like I whenever I'm on my bike now for like a real pick-me-up, I'll listen to My Hero to get like,
I can do this.
And I didn't realize the song was like 20 years old. So,
So it has remained their biggest seller with over 2 million sold in the U.S. and again, many others worldwide. I do want to play you a short clip of a song that still owns my heart a million times over, and here it is. Oh. Got
it's
it.
So
just
it's really
at 29 seconds exactly.
I was going to say, oh, here, Dave Grohl, 9-1. Yeah. And, well, no, he didn't do 30 seconds. I can lay off the one. Damn, yeah. That was good. Damn, that song is so good. And the video.
Yeah, and the video is so, it's like, honestly, like a super, I was watching the video, and I think I'd ever seen that before, which is wild. Yeah, it's like they're both in dream states.
Yes.
These two people that are dreaming and stuff like that. And each of them is having a different dream. One of them, like, beats up these people being mean to his wife, and so he's mm-hmm. free to get out, and then he wakes up and realizes that his wife is in a dream where she's being heavily affected. She calls him on the phone in real life, he answers it, and then goes back to sleep so he can get into her dream and kick the shit out of the people trying to kill her in the dream.
Mm-hmm. Anyways. I'm double checking because I want to say Michelle Gondry did that video.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I couldn't tell if it was actually a woman or if it was one of the other band members wearing a wig.
It is, but I'm saying I think Michelle Gondry.
Oh, made the video. Okay.
Made the video. I typed Michelle Gondry all wrong. Shit. Anyway.
Okay.
Proceed.
So yeah. So again, like I said, this was the biggest album they've had, you know, still to date. They did come up with. They had a third album that came out in the '90s, just near the end. There Is Nothing Left to Lose. A bit more of a struggle with the band came after Grohl fired Stoll from the group, and shortly after, Mendel told Grohl he was quitting to reunite with his old band, only to change his mind literally the next day.
Wow.
Just, he quit the band, and then the next day was like, JK.
JK.
So There's Nothing Left to Lose came out November 2nd, 1999, just squeeze it in there in the 90s. This would later become the first album to win a Grammy. Which I think that's more to do with the fact that the Foo Fighters were so well known by this point that they were in serious contention for things, as
yes.
opposed to before when it was just not as big of a deal like that. That kind of rock wasn't so.
Well, but who else? I mean, when did you say The Color and Shape came out?
It was 97, so I mean,
who
it
else
is.
was big in 97? Were we even on that wavelength in 97? I mean, because obviously they
know.
Were Everlong played nonstop on MTV.
Yeah.
And Monkey Wrench was all over the place too. But yeah.
I mean, you look at the album sales, like compared to when we were talking about like Whitney Houston and you know, the other like big singers like that. Like 2 million albums as a best selling album for the Foo Fighters is fucking pennies in the bucket for compared to some of those big ones. So it's one of those things where like they were so important to us, but like realizing that they probably weren't as important to adults, the people who buy things with money. So
but my hero was like a ballad for the era, and it's still a song that people, I mean, even if Everlong didn't do it for you and you're a monster person and you have brain problems, My Hero works for you.
I would say Monkey Wrench was just a fun song, a super fun song. Everlong was kind of the like super awesome, deep and amazing song. And then My Hero was like basically the commercial like hit. Like you could use it to, you could put it on any movie, like throw it in there in different scenes. And I'm pretty sure they did, in fact. I think there was a show called Blank Man, and I think they used the song My Hero in it at some point. I don't remember. That timing might not line up on that. I just could have sworn it was something to do with one of those superhero movies that it was in. But
yeah.
So as far as the songs on this album, were a bit more good, not mind-blowing level, except for one of them, which is also one of my favorite Foo Fighters songs, Learn to Fly.
That's a good one. And the video is so good,
too.
Yeah. The
video is and so, so, yeah, so that's still one I absolutely love, and I think that also was used in like commercials and stuff occasionally as well. So it was somehow the first song by the band to reach the top 100 charts. Wild.
Learn to Fly was?
Yeah, it was the first song in the band that reached the top 100 charts. The albums would reach like the top 20s, but apparently the songs would not, which is wild to me. I don't know how that's even possible.
Right.
Other singles included Stacked Actors, Breakout, Next Year, and Generator, which was in Europe only. Which again, I couldn't tell you what those songs, like I'm pretty sure if I heard at least one or two
Breakout,
of them.
I remember.
Yeah, I'd probably remember it. Breakout. So, but I just off the top of my head, I can't recall them right off the bat, but
yeah,
I don't know what to say. Foo Fighters rule.
They do.
This is one where like, I am not joking around. I do love this band very, very much. It's one of the, I think it's one of the best examples of a band that can go hard, soft, or in between.
Mm-hmm.
Just literally a song for every mood you could ever be in. And especially now they've even had more in the 2000s and, you know, and beyond. Plus Dave Grohl is just the coolest, like, every quote from Dave Grohl is just the fucking coolest thing ever.
And he's a genuinely good person.
Yeah.
And that makes the difference. It's like, there are a few people in this world that you're like, no, that's a good, like, he's just otherworldly in his like sincerity and humor and skill and talent. And what, I mean, wasn't there that video of him, like he broke his leg on stage and then he like got it bandaged up and he was like, I'm just gonna keep playing the show. Or like, he's just a remarkable person. He's just, I don't know. People with that level of talent and then also that level of genuineness, I guess that's a word.
Yeah, it feels like because there's
so many
people that talk about like, you know, getting into these careers and then finding out, it, you know, it's kind of soul sucking and everything like that. Like you mentioned with Rivers Cuomo being lonely and stuff. Like, I just think that Dave Grohl has a blast with this like all the time. And I know that's probably not completely accurate, but that's how it feels when I see him doing what he's doing. So, as I mentioned, I think the coolest thing about them is that it's this weird genre of them that straddles the line between rock and roll and alternative rock that is such a unique, because it's, I mean, technically I think they're alternative rock, but it's so on the borderline between the two that they can go both ways. And I think that's a really interesting trait of them, is that there's so many different listeners that like it for different reasons.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
So Foo Fighters.
Great videos. Great talent.
Yeah, I think we even talked
music.
About not that long ago the Mentos commercial in Big Me, where it was just literally just a Futos, where they just did a joke version of the Mentos commercials from the 90s.
Yeah, boy, they were just, I don't know. Both bands are good. I think Foo Fighters is a stronger band by a long shot, but both
especially
get
the
different
90s versions, like they just had so many more songs too, like than Weezer had.
Well,
the,
I mean, but you say that, but for some, Weezer will always be like Weezer.
I will say that.
Foo Fighters is
a really good band for more people, I think. They like it more, but people who love Weezer fucking love Weezer. Like, there's it is very much a drug rug also, like, of Jason, at least from my recollection, Sublime and Weezer were 100% like the people who wore drug rugs and stuff in school. And again, that is me saying I also love both of those bands as well. I'll sing most of the songs of 40 Ounces to Freedom with you any day of the week. So
dang.
Yeah.
Dang. Well, that's our court case. Weezer versus Foo Fighters. Very, very eager to see the results on that one, but that'll be a wrap. So if you want to find us and get your votes, and you can check us out on Facebook and Twitter at 90s Court, Instagram at 90s.court. And if you want to support the show and get some bonus content and shout outs as well, like you heard this week, you can go to patreon.com/90s court. And as always, Andy, and I would love it if you hopped on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever you do, leave us a nice 5-star rating and review. Just, we'll send you some more emotional gift cards.
Please.
To any restaurant of your choice.
Only for $5, though. $5 Outback Steakhouse emotional gift cards.
That won't even cut your, like, cover your tip.
No, not at all.
So, no. And again, remember, it's emotional, so it's make-believe.
It's not real. You're not going to get it. We're just saying, like, you can choose the restaurant and then not be able to spend it there.
I'll be sending it to you. Yeah. Through my heart and soul. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's our show for this week. I think we went long, but it was a fun one. Considering we were at the beginning of the show, like, we're going to be so tired. I think we've come a long way from talking about dead children. So
we did. Well, here you are bringing it back just to really just set the tone for the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm. That's my sign off. So
dead kids.
Guys, that is episode 59. We will be back next week with episode 60. And, hang in there, everybody. Yeah.
And again, thanks for the patience of the people who had to wait an entire 24 hours to listen to this
episode. Man, I slept all day afternoon yesterday. Yeah. I needed that. I knew I needed something. So
yeah. Lisa told me that she needed some time to rest it up and everything like that. And then several hours later, she's like, man, I'm really glad I did that. I was asleep basically the whole time. So anyways, thank you guys so much. And we will catch you again next week.
Bye.
Stay rad.